Welcome back to The Deep End. Today, I want to start by asking you to just visualize a relationship. It's one that's pretty much sacred for anyone who owns a pet.
Mm-hmm.
You get a puppy or a kitten, you take him to the vet, smiles, gives them a checkup, and you know, hands you a bag of food.
Right. That's the standard operating procedure for millions of households. That's all built on trust.
It is. Yeah. And we generally assume that that trust is, well-placed.
Yeah.
But what if I told you that the source material we're looking at today describes that exact relationship?
The vet and the food company.
Yeah. It describes that alliance as a multi-billion dollar fraud.
That is a heavy accusation.
It's massive. The author actually calls it a mechanism that is slowly poisoning our pets.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have to be honest. When I first read that, my skepticism radar just went off.
I get that. I completely understand that reaction. It sounds hyperbolic.
It sounds like a conspiracy theory.
Right. But the source today isn't some random blog post. We're diving into Spin Doctors, Junk Pet Food Partners in Crime by Dr. Tom Lonsdale. And this is a compilation of his writings from 2001 to 2011. Lonsdale isn't an outsider. He's a graduate of the Royal Veterinary College in London. He's a whistleblower from inside the clinic.
Okay, that changes the weight of it. So this is a vet saying, we're doing it wrong.
He's saying we are doing it criminally wrong.
His mission, as he puts it, is to expose systemic animal cruelty and consumer fraud. And he frames this with a really specific image on the book's cover. It's a Venn diagram.
I saw that. It's intense.
It is. It shows three intersecting circles. They're labeled white collar, corporate, and organized.
And in the middle,
right where they all overlap, is the word crime.
Yeah.
Lonsdale's basically saying the modern pet food industry operates right at that intersection.
Organized crime. I mean, when I think of organized crime, I think of the mafia, not a bag of kibble with a golden retriever on it.
And that is exactly the cognitive dissonance he's trying to break through. He's arguing that we've normalized a system that is fundamentally harming animals for profit. All right, so if we're going to entertain this idea, we have to look at the evidence. The overview for this deep dive is to look at three things. The health consequences, which he describes in some really visceral terms,
mm-hmm.
The corruption of the institutions we trust, and then the solution, which honestly surprised me.
The solution is the simplest part, but to understand why it's necessary, you have to understand the indictment. And it really starts with biology.
The health argument. Okay, let's dig into this because, again, I walk down the aisle of the supermarket. I see bags that say scientifically formulated.
Complete balanced.
Digestive health. I just assume a lot of smart people in white coats made sure this stuff is good for my dog.
And that's the marketing. Lonsdale's argument is that the marketing it ignores basic biology.
Yeah.
He reminds us that dogs, cats, ferrets, they're carnivores. They're hunters.
Meaning they eat meat.
Meaning they eat prey.
Yeah.
And there's a difference. Lonsdale argues these animals are biologically designed to rip and tear and crunch. They are not designed for a sterile, grain-based, ultra-processed slurry that's been baked into hard little nuggets.
He gets really graphic about what happens when you feed a carnivore this industrial slurry for its whole life. He uses the term foul mouth rot.
It's not a polite term, is it?
No, it's nasty. But is he just talking about bad breath? Because my dog has bad breath, I don't think he's dying.
See, and that's the trap. Lonsdale argues that doggy breath is actually the smell of disease. He calls it periodontal disease.
Okay.
But it's not just about a few cavities. I mean, think about the mechanics of it. If a dog eats soft, processed food, or even kibble that just turns to paste when it's chewed, there's no scrubbing action.
Right. It just sticks to the teeth.
Exactly. It just sits there. It ferments. It creates a bacterial colony.
Hmm.
Lonsdale argues that because the animal isn't ripping flesh from bone, which is like nature's toothbrush, the gums become chronically infected.
So he sees this mouth rot as a gateway.
A gateway to what?
That's my question.
Systemic failure. I mean, imagine you have an open, infected wound in your mouth 24/7. Every time you swallow, every time you chew, you're pumping bacteria and toxins straight into your bloodstream.
Okay, that puts it in perspective. It's a continuous infection.
And that continuous infection just hammers the internal organs. He lists liver disease, kidney failure, heart failure. He even uses the phrase diet-induced AIDS.
Whoa, AIDS. That seems inflammatory.
Well, he clarifies, he doesn't mean the HIV virus. He means an AIDS-like state. Acquired immune deficiency syndrome. He's arguing the immune system gets so exhausted fighting this war in the mouth that it eventually just collapses. The animal becomes prone to everything else.
So the argument is we're feeding them food that rots their mouths.
Yeah.
Which then shuts down their organs.
Yeah.
But If this is true, how does the science label get on the bag?
This brings us to what Lonsdale calls the laugh test.
I did appreciate this logic. It kind of cuts through the jargon.
It does. He posits a simple question. If science tells you that ultra-processed, shelf-stable, grain-heavy junk is suitable for a carnivore to eat every single meal of its entire life,
then that science is laughable.
It's laughable. He says if the result of the science is a sick animal with rotten teeth, then the science is either incompetent or it's corrupt. You don't need a PhD to see the outcome.
But he does have more than just common sense. There was one specific study in the text that really, it blew my mind. The Beagle study.
The Dr. Larry Myers study? Oh, this is fascinating because it connects the mouth to the brain in a way most people would never even think about.
So walk us through this. These weren't just house pets, right?
No. These were working dogs. Beagles used for bovine estrus detection.
Okay, for those of us who aren't farmers, that means?
They smell cows to see when they're ready to breed. It requires an incredibly sensitive, high-performance nose. I mean, these dogs are precision instruments.
Got it. So what happened to them?
Well, they were being fed a standard industrial diet, and as time went on, they developed dental calculus tartar buildup.
The mouth rot.
The standard mouth rot we just talked about. And as the tartar got worse, something strange happened. They lost their sense of smell.
They couldn't do their job.
Zero performance. They became totally useless as working dogs.
Now, normally you'd think, oh, the dog is sick. Maybe it has a cold. Maybe it's just old.
Right. But they did one thing. They just anesthetized the dogs and cleaned their teeth. That's it. Scraped off all the tartar. The next day, the sense of smell returned. Full capacity.
That is wild. So the dirty teeth literally turned off the nose.
This is where Lonsdale introduces his cybernetic hypothesis of periodontal disease.
That sounds like science fiction.
It's actually systems theory. He argues the body is a machine with feedback loops. And if the mouth is toxic full of inflammation and pain signals, the body creates a feedback loop that shuts down other inputs, like smell.
Like a safety switch.
Exactly.
Yeah.
In the wild, if a predator loses its sense of smell, it can't hunt. It starves. It dies. That's nature's way of removing a sick animal from the gene pool.
But in our homes.
In our homes, the dog loses its sense of smell, but we just keep pouring kibble into the bowl. The feedback loop is broken. We keep the animal alive, but in this state of chronic low-level illness. The machine is broken, but we force it to keep running.
That is a terrifying thought. So naturally, if commercial food is the poison, the answer must be raw food. But wait, Lonsdale isn't exactly high-fiving the modern raw food industry either.
No, and this is a really important nuance. He is extremely critical of what he calls the fad raw diet trap.
You've seen these in the fancy pet stores, right? The frozen patties, the biologically appropriate raw food, or BARF diet.
Yeah, it's usually minced meat with some blueberries, some kale, vitamin powder. It looks like a smoothie bowl for dogs.
Exactly.
Lonsdale calls that a bait-and-switch scam by hucksters.
Hucksters. He really doesn't mince words, pun intended there. Why is he against it? It's raw meat, isn't it?
It's raw, but think back to the mechanism. The foul mouth rot. How do you prevent that?
By scrubbing the teeth.
Yeah.
Ripping and tearing.
Exactly. And you cannot rip and tear mints.
Ah, I see. It's the texture.
It's the physics of the jaw. A dog's jaw is like a pair of scissors. It needs resistance to cut. Mints offers zero resistance.
It just slides down.
It just slides down the throat. Lonsdale argues that if you feed raw mints, you're bypassing the essential dental benefits. You might be giving them better ingredients than kibble, sure, but you are not solving the mechanical problem of the mouth.
So the veggies and the vitamins in those patties are just...
window dressing. According to him, they're just there to make the food look appealing to humans. A dog doesn't need kale. It needs to chew on a bone.
Okay, so we have the health argument. It's mechanics as much as chemistry.
Right.
But let's shift to the partners in crime part of the title, because this is where I start to struggle again.
The conspiracy aspect.
Yeah. I mean, he's accusing these massive corporations, Mars, Nestle, Colgate, Palmolive, of knowing this and doing it anyway. But then he drags the vets into it.
Oh.
And that's hard for me. My vet is a nice person. She loves animals.
Of course.
You're telling me she's a white-collar criminal?
Lonsdale would say, yes, but maybe not intentionally in the way you're thinking. He uses this historical analogy that I think really helps explain it. He compares modern vets to the barber surgeons of the past.
The guys who would, like, use leeches or cut off your leg with no anesthesia.
Right. Those practitioners weren't trying to be evil. They truly believed they were helping, but they were just operating on bad information and tradition.
I see.
Lonsdale argues modern vets are similar. they're inflicting suffering through the diet they recommend, one patient at a time, often out of ignorance.
But where does that ignorance come from? They go to medical school, they study for years.
And this is the academic corruption circle of the Venn diagram. The source material details how the universities are funded. He points out that the major pet food companies sponsor the teaching posts. There was a Waltham lecturer and a Ralston Purina lecturer at the Royal Veterinary College.
So the professors are actually paid by the dog food companies.
In many cases, the entire departments are funded by them, and that shapes the curriculum. There's a story in the text from a first-year vet student that perfectly illustrates how this indoctrination happens.
I remember this note. It was shocking.
She wrote to Lonsdale complaining about her nutrition professor. This professor taught the class to chant a mantra. Pets need nutrients, not ingredients.
Nutrients, not ingredients. That sounds very scientific. Sophisticated.
It's reductionist. It implies the source doesn't matter, only the chemical profile. And then the professor dropped the bomb to prove his point.
Oh, boy.
He told the class that you could take leather boots and motor oil.
Wait. Say that again. Leather boots and motor oil.
Yes. He claimed that if you took old leather boots, which are protein and motor oil, which is fat, and you just chemically balance them with the right synthetic vitamins, you could technically meet the nutritional requirements for a dog.
And he was saying this as a good thing.
He was using it to prove that ingredients don't matter. As long as the chemical analysis on the bag says complete, it doesn't matter if it comes from a prime steak or an old shoe.
That is horrifying. I mean, if I saw leather boot stew on a menu, I wouldn't eat it just because it had the right amount of nitrogen.
Exactly. But that is how vet students are taught to think about food. It's chemistry, not biology. And if a student raises their hand and questions it, they're told they're falling for fads or being unscientific.
So you have a captured education system churning out vets who believe the motor oil logic. But surely when these people get out into the real world, someone speaks up. Someone says, hey, all the dogs eating this boot stew are getting sick.
Well, Lonsdale spoke up, and that brings us to the censorship.
This part of the deep dive felt like a thriller. The media suppression.
It is quite a saga. So back in August 2001, Lonsdale was ready to launch his book, Raw Meaty Bones. He had lined up major press, The Australian, The Sun Herald, big papers.
Photos taken, interviews done.
All done, locked in. And then at the last minute, just silence, the stories were pulled, canned.
Did they say why?
Not officially, but, you know, money talks. The advertising revenue from these conglomerates is massive. And get this. In the Sun Herald, in the slot where the expose was supposed to run, what do you think appeared?
Please don't tell me it was a dog food ad.
Close. It was an advertorial, an ad disguised as an article titled, New Food Helps Pets Live Longer.
You cannot make this stuff up. That is the literal definition of spin doctors.
It completely erased his critique and replaced it with industry propaganda.
And when the industry did actually engage with him, it was weird. Yeah. Tell us about the hands-free defense.
Oh, this is a classic. There was a radio interview on the ABC. Lonsdale was in the studio. And representing the industry was a Dr. Duncan Hall, the external affairs manager for Uncle Ben's, which is Mars. Now, Hall didn't come into the studio. He called in on a hands-free speakerphone.
So he sounded like he was in a tunnel.
He was barely audible. Lonsdale implies this might have been a tactic to be distant and hard to pin down. But in that fuzzy audio, he made a really stunning admission. He defended processed food as validated nutrition, but then, when pressed about bones, he said raw bones are okay occasionally.
For what?
For boredom.
For boredom? So a bone is a toy, like a tennis ball.
Exactly. Not for health, not for teeth, just to keep them occupied. It completely dismisses the biological necessity of the chewing action.
Meanwhile, Lonsdale was getting absolutely hammered by his own profession.
He was expelled from the Australian Veterinary Association. They convened what he calls a kangaroo court and kicked him out for bringing the profession into disrepute.
That's the catch-all, isn't it? If you point out the emperor has no clothes, you're the one making the empire look bad.
Precisely.
And it's not just Australia, though. The source material lists these failures in the UK and the EU. It seems like the regulators are just asleep at the wheel.
Or worse, they're in the passenger seat. Look at the Royal College of Veterinary Surgeons, the RCVS in the UK. Lonsdale and his supporters push hard. They even got an early day motion in the British Parliament. Dozens of MPs signed it, calling for an investigation.
That sounds promising.
And the RCVS shut it down. They stated that they rely on the Pet Food Manufacturers Association for their nutritional evidence.
Wait, the regulator relies on the Trade Association for the facts. That is like the FDA asking tobacco companies if cigarettes are safe.
It is exactly like that. And the disdain they held for Lonsdale was just palpable. There's a story about a meeting he had with an RCVS president.
The hamster comment.
Yes. The president reportedly looked at Lonsdale, a qualified vet, a whistleblower, and told him that a hamster would get as many votes as him in an election.
That is just incredibly arrogant. It's basically saying, you are nothing. You are a joke to us.
It just shows how entrenched the establishment view is. They don't just disagree with him. They think the entire idea of raw food is laughable.
And then you have the bureaucracy. The EU deciding that bones are hazardous waste.
May 2004, the EU classified bones from butchers as waste instead of food.
So if a butcher gave a dog a bone,
he could be fined for distributing hazardous waste. Lonsdale compares this to a flat earth debate. He says it's a fundamental misunderstanding of reality. To a dog, a bone is essential medicine. To the EU regulators, it's trash.
It really paints a picture of a world gone mad. But before we wrap up, I want to pivot to the so what factor.
Yeah.
Because maybe some of our listeners don't have dogs. Maybe they think, well, it's sad for the poodles, but it doesn't affect me.
Lonsdale argues it absolutely affects you. This brings us to the concept of one medicine.
He warns that human doctors are getting sucked into this too.
Yes. He talks about the One Medicine Initiative, which is all about linking human and animal health. In theory, it's great.
Yeah.
But Lonsdale warns that if the medical profession accepts the pet food lie, they miss critical connections. Take dog bites, for example.
How does kibble cause dog bites?
Well, think about the pain. If a dog has foul mouth rot, it's in chronic pain. It's irritable.
I know I'm grumpy when I have a toothache.
Now imagine having a toothache for 5 years. Lonsdale argues that this poor diet leads to behavioral instability. A dog in pain is much more likely to snap at a child. He sees a direct link between the junk food diet and aggression.
So we are creating dangerous animals.
And we are breeding antibiotic-resistant bacteria in their mouths, which can then be transferred to humans. It's a public health issue.
Plus the economic waste. We're spending billions to manufacture this stuff, ship it, and then billions more to treat the diseases it causes.
It's a cycle of waste. Lonsdale calls it a racketeering effort. He explicitly mentions RICO, the Racketeer Influenced and Corrupt Organizations Act.
That's the law they used to take down the mob.
He believes the situation fits the definition. A coordinated effort involving fraud, censorship, and cruelty, all for profit.
So we've heard the problem. It's big, it's scary, and it involves leather boots. What is the solution?
The solution is it's deceptively simple. Stop feeding the machine.
Literally.
Literally. Lonsdale advises a switch to raw meaty bones, not the mince, not the expensive patties.
No.
Whole carcasses, chicken wings, lamb ribs, rabbit, things that require the animal to use its scissors, its jaws.
And table scraps.
Yes. Real food, the stuff you eat. He argues that if you restore the mechanical function of the mouth, the health benefits are almost immediate. The machine starts working again.
It's a compelling argument. It basically asks us to trust nature over a label.
Which is harder than it sounds in today's world.
There is one final provocative thought Lonsdale leaves us with. It's about the legal system. And this one really stuck with me.
The class action possibility.
Yeah. He suggests that if pet owners ever truly realized they had been sold a slow poison, the legal fallout would be nuclear.
He's talking about suing vets. Not just for the cost of the food, but for the years of medical bills, the kidney treatments, the dental cleanings, the heart medication. If that link was ever proven in court, it would bankrupt the profession.
Wow. Imagine suing your vet for selling you the diet that made your dog sick. That would turn the entire industry upside down.
Lonsdale believes that fear of litigation is one of the reasons the industry fights him so hard. They really can't afford to be wrong.
It's a high-stakes game. So, for everyone listening, we treat our pets like children, but Lonsdale was arguing we're feeding them worse than livestock.
It's a hard pill to swallow.
It is. So next time you're cuddling your dog, maybe, take a look at their teeth, smell their breath, and ask yourself if the science you bought is actually working.
And ask who profits if it isn't.
Thanks for diving deep with us. This has been an eye-opener. We'll see you next time.